throughout our lives, whether it's in Kiruv or it's within relationships, with a spouse, with students, with friends, we are always finding ourselves in a state of influencing other people. Our actions, our speech, the messages that we give over could influence other people, especially when someone is involved in Kiruv. That's their goal, to try to influence, to try to inspire other people. So I wanted to touch on two different points of how a person can effectively influence another person. And the first is based on a Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Bava Basra, and Daf Samach, the Gemara tells us a story that Rav Yanai had a tree, and his tree hung over from the Rosh Hashayachid, from the private domain, over the street, over the Rosh Hashayachid. And there was another guy who also had a tree, same type of situation, his private tree hung over. And the people, the public, they came over to the man, and they said, you know, your tree that's hanging over, it's bothering us. We're walking by, it's in our way, we'd like you to cut it down. This is his tree, his very special tree, he doesn't want to cut it down. So he went to Rav Yanai to ask Rav Yanai, what should I do? They want me to cut down the tree. So Aslo Kamed Rav Yanai, Amrele, Zil Ha'idna, go right now. Rav Yanai said, go away. V'salam Acher, come back tomorrow. Belela, that night, Rav Yanai Shadr Katsi Elahu Didei. He went ahead and he cut down his own tree. L'macher Aslo Kamed, so the guy came back as he was supposed to, and the next day to Rav Yanai. Amrele, Zil Kot, so Rav Yanai said, you should go cut your tree down. Amrele, the man said to Rav Yanai, Hamar Nami Yisrei, but you also have a tree. If you, why should I cut down my tree? You also have a tree. Amrele, he said to him, Zil Chazi, go look. Ikots di di kots, didcha, ilokots di di lo ti kots at at. Go look, if my tree is still up, then you're right, you don't have to cut yours down. But if my tree is cut, then you have to go ahead and cut yours down. So the Gemara asks on this story, it's a very, very strange story. He says, Meikara, my sovel, besof my sovel. What was Rav Yanai's train of thought the whole time? I mean, if Rav Yanai thought that the tree is there inappropriately, he should have cut it down a long time ago. And he thought it was appropriately, he should have left it up. So the Gemara says, Meikara sovel, nichol lebnei rishus harabim diyasvi bitule. Originally he thought that people like having trees. You know, you're going down the highway and there are trees overhanging, the scenery, the shade. The shade, it's beautiful. People enjoy it. They're benefiting from the fact that his personal tree is hanging over into the Rosh Hashanah. But Kevan the Chazad the Kama'akvi, but once he saw that people were upset about the tree, it was in their way, Shadu Katsia, he went ahead and he told the people to cut it down. But the Gemara says that's very, very nice. But the lemele zil kots didcha v'hadar kots didi. So why, when the man approached him, did he say, you know, come back tomorrow and we'll discuss it then? Why didn't he just say, yeah, I see that people are bothered by the fact that you have a tree, so go cut it down now, and I'll also go cut mine down. And the Gemara answers a very important yisod. Gemara says, mishum dresh lakish. The amr his koshishu v'koshu. Kshot atzmacha v'acharkach kshot acherim. First, you have to beautify yourself, and then you're able to beautify others. Meaning, Rav Yanai knew that if he would just go to the guy and say, you know, go cut your tree down, and then I'll go cut mine. The guy would say, oh, what? Are you telling me what to do? Like, let me see you do yours first. He would not have had the ability to influence the man. But once he was able to set as an example that this very special tree that he also loved so much, he was willing to go ahead and cut down, then the other person would be able to receive the message that he's trying to give over. So the first step in when a person is trying to influence another person is not about working on his way of speaking. Is he dynamic? Not dynamic. Does he have a good story? That's second. The first thing is you have to lead by example. And if a person is not walking the walk, he's just talking the talk, then no matter what he says, no matter how amazing of a speaker he is, no matter how dynamic he is, doesn't make a difference. Nothing that he says is going to penetrate. The first, like the Gemara says, kshot atzvacha. First you have to beautify yourself, and then others. And it happens to be when we realize that we are the power of influence, and this is, again, in every single situation. You don't have to wait to go into Kirov for this to happen. It's in your own home, influencing your home with energy, with Torah, with values, your family, your friends, your roommates, your shir, your yeshiva, wherever you are. If you're able to act in an exemplary way, other people are going to listen, other people are going to follow. That's the key. And on that, I'd just like to make a side point. And that is that sometimes people, when they're in that position, and they have recognized that they could influence in such a way, and they step up their game, maybe even past what they're naturally able to do, or what they feel even comfortable as being themselves. They don't even think they're holding in that place. But they act that way because they know people are looking at them, and they could influence them. Sometimes that holds people back from growing even more. Meaning, as long as they're on top of the people that they're influencing, that's enough. And this is a side point, but it's important that especially when we're in a position of influence, that we're still able to tap into people that are growing and going higher and higher and higher and higher, to remind ourselves that it's not just enough that we're on top of the people that we want to influence, but we can continue growing more and more and more. Just tell a fascinating story I saw this week. Just for the story itself, it's worth saying over. The Maril Diskin, Rishu Ablaib Diskin, one of the greatest Torah giants two generations ago. And he wanted to know if he was ready yet to Paskin Shilas. Is he yet ready to answer people's questions? His father at the time was a posek. So what he would do is he would stand near his father, and every time his father would get a question, he'd hear the question, he'd run out, and he'd think for himself, how do you answer this question? And then he'd go back in and find out, so what did Abba say? What was the answer to the question? And every single time, from the time that he started doing that, he was on the money. Every question, he was able to figure out exactly what his father was able to say. Okay. One time, a question came in front of Mariel Diskin's father. The question was related to a Sefer Torah that was in a fire. It got burnt. And there were different questions involved in what to do now with the Sefer Torah, etc. Hey, Mariel Diskin heard the question. He ran away, didn't want to hear the answer. He ran, I think it was even before the question was even posed, but he knew what the question was about. He ran outside to start thinking, what's the answer to this, that? He went back in and he asked the Gabbai, so, what did my father answer when he asked the question? He said they asked the question to him and he immediately fainted on the floor. The disgrace of a Sefer Torah being burnt just knocked him out. He couldn't even fathom the question. That's when that real Diskin realized that it could be, yes, I know all the answers and the halacha and this way and that way, but I was still lacking a certain sensitivity to the kedusha of the Torah that I wasn't yet ready to go into that position. And that's sometimes when, I'm speaking for myself, but sometimes when we're in a role, in a position that we're influencing other people, again, as long as we're just above those people, and they can learn from us, and we're being consistent, we're not inconsistent, so that's great. And maybe again, that'll be higher than what we really are. But then we'll just stop, and that'll be enough. But if we're able to tap into people that are higher, people that are growing, people that are involved in growth all the time, and we can also recognize that we could even shoot higher, we won't measure our success based on the people that we're influencing. Okay, so the first step again in influencing other people is we have to lead by example. And if we're not leading by example, nothing else, we can't even start step two. Step number two is highlighted by a different Gemara. The Gemara says, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, and Daf of Gimel Amud Beis, the Gemara is discussing interrogating witnesses about whether they saw the new moon. Did they see the new moon? Are we ready to be Makadish the Chodesh, to sanctify the new moon, to say that it's Rosh Chodesh, based on their testimony? And the Gemara says that if the Edim ever say that they saw the sun on the side of the concave part of the moon, the concave, for anyone who doesn't know, that's the missing part of the moon, the part that you don't see. Okay, if anyone says they saw the sun on that side of the moon, you know that they're not telling the truth. Now, we all know in this room that the reason they're not telling the truth is because the moon is a reflection of the sun. So you can't have the missing part of the moon facing the sun. The sun always has to be on the other side. But that's not what the Gemara says. And obviously the Gemara knew that. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara is a very fascinating lashon. The Gemara says, Lo rasa chama pigimasa shalavana. The chama forever, never in the history of the world, ever saw the pigima of the lavana, of the moon. Pigima, pigam, is a negative term. It's not a, when we talk about something being missing, we say chaser, it's lacking. But the Gemara used a very funny term. Pigima, like if I say you have a pigam, that means you're inherently have a problem. That's a very insulting comment, okay? You never say that to anyone. So here the Gemara says that the sun never saw the pigam of the moon. Why not? Dechol shadaita. Because it would make the moon feel bad. That's what the Gemara says. So what's a strange terminology? Pigimasa, again, focusing on something inherently wrong. And what's this idea that the moon would have chalishas adas, would just be in despair? I once heard from my Rebbe, the name of the Baal Shem Tov. He heard this from the Nesiva Shalom once at a tish, and it's printed in the Nesiva Shalom in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Chukas. Coincidence, if there's such a thing. Okay. And the Nesiva Shalom quotes in the Baal Shem Tov as follows. He says that throughout Chazal, we always find that the relationship between the sun and the moon is a relationship between one influencing and one being influenced. The sun is always the one influencing, because it gives off the light, and the moon is being influenced. It's the one that receives the light from the sun. And the Gemara is telling us a yesod in how to influence other people. And that is, if you go ahead and you look at the person that you're trying to influence, whether it's a student, again, any relationship that you're involved, and you see the person as having an inherent problem. My spouse, my student, they're like this. They have this problem that's inherently part of their essence. A pagam. Not just something that they didn't learn yet, they're uneducated, they never had experience. It's something be'etzem, it's something in their pnim, inside their essence. You will never have the ability to influence the other person, dechol shadaita, because the person is going to be in despair. When someone realizes that the one being influencing them thinks that they're bad, that they have an inherent problem, they'll never be able to grow. And that is because of two different reasons. Reason number one, when someone is growing through a relationship with a mentor, meaning they're not just reading a book, but they're growing through someone else, the mentee has to feel safe in the hands of the mentor. The mentor is trying to mold them, trying to change them, trying to develop them. So in order for me to change, I have to feel like I'm safe in this person's hands. I trust him to make this move, to make that move, to tell me something like this, to tell me something like that. The only way that I could trust someone else is if I feel that they believe in me and they see me as inherently good. Psychologically, it's very, very difficult if I think that the person thinks that I'm inherently bad for me to say, oh, well, just take me away. You know, it just doesn't go. It does. We don't allow ourselves to give up a little bit of ourselves into putting ourselves into someone's hands if that person doesn't see us as inherently good. And secondly, in order for me to grow, I view myself through the eyes of the person that's influencing me. So if the person that's influencing me sees me, I'm really over here. This is where I am. This is how good I am. I'm up here. It's just that I made a mistake or have bad habits, this, that, okay. But it's not, that's not who I am. I'm here. Oh, I view myself then as over here. Because I view myself through the eyes of the person that's trying to influence me. And therefore, it's crucial that the mentee feels that the mentor recognizes his potential, recognizes that any mistake that he's made is just a mistake. It's not something that's inherent in him, and believes in him, so he puts his hands into, he puts himself into the hands of the mentor, allows himself to be molded, and knows that he could shoot for something much higher because the mentor believes in him. And third of all, now it's two reasons, the third reason is that as an influencer, as a mentor, it's almost impossible to give your time and effort and patience and everything that it's needed in order to influence someone else if you don't really think that that guy is, if you're just coming to reprimand, you're just coming to give him a speech, but inherently you don't see him as a good person. You see him as a very, very problematic person. The second you stamp the person as problematic in his essence, there's almost no chance that you're going to be able to invest in everything that's needed in order to be able to give it over to him in the proper way. So the Indian here is to look at people and to see that basically they're perfect. Either not, they made a lot of mistakes, perhaps big mistakes. That's not who they are. That's not part of their essence. That's something that's superficial. Like we say in Shir HaShirim, the pasuk says, "Kulach yafa rayasiu mum ein bach." The way Hashem looks at Bnei Yisrael is umum ein bach. There's no blemish in you. I mean, give me a break. Just read the Torah. Jewish people, you know, I love myself and I love the Jewish people, but you know, we're not doing so hot. Mum ein bach. There's no blemish bach in you. Hashem views all of those mistakes, chatayim, as something external to ourselves. It's our physical body that did it. It's not our pure neshama that's inside. That is the relationship that Hashem has with us. And that's what the Tomer Devorah writes, the Midah of Ki Chesed Hu, that Hashem always looks at the Jewish people as perfect. And he writes over there, that's how we have to treat all members of Klal Yisrael. We have to recognize that each person is perfect in their essence. They made mistakes, they did things wrong, they need to be fixed. Yeah, but that's not who they are. They're perfect, pure neshamos. And he highlights, out of all the relationships, he highlights one's wife. That a person has to view his wife that way at all times. So even if we think we're not in the positions yet of being in Kirov, or we're not necessarily influencing people on a day-to-day basis, first of all, that's wrong. We are. People are always looking at us and saying, how does this guy act? How does this guy speak? And by example, through our leadership, Kshot Atzmacha, if we beautify ourselves, even raise the bar of how we should act because people are looking at us, that itself will influence others. And to have a more direct effect on other people, we have to remember that each person, inherently, in their essence, is perfect. There's no pagam. You can't see a pagam. If you see a pagam, then we're not going to be able to affect people. We won't be able to enable other people to grow to their utmost potential.